Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Jordan Hamm is in D.C. with the Diamondbacks as part of what's going on with the winter baseball meeting. So we're going to Skype in Jordy here in a couple of minutes. Peter King will join us at 10:20 today. Peter is going to be Skyping in, it sounds like, from the back of a cab once again, because he just left the Raiders facility. So we'll Skype in Peter King. And then while Brock Huard, ESPN, Brock's boring. He's just going to join us by phone. ESPN college football analyst, former Washington Husky quarterback, all things around the Final Four of the college football playoff. That will be with Brock Huard. And that comes up at about 10:35. So there's a lot going on. Today, a good Tuesday. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our football show. Brad Sessmatt, Football AZ, on tonight on Fox Sports Arizona with 8 airings tonight, 8 airings tomorrow, and 4 airings on Thursday. It's always good to be on all platforms. That's what we are all about. We have a new character to introduce to you today. She is going to be brilliant. She's going to be a rock star, and I don't think she's going to be here long. But Haley Stasiak is now part of our team, and she is going to be jumping on at some point during the show today, perhaps or maybe not. I haven't decided as of yet. Eric is, of course, our senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day. And Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. On the sports front, so the Monday night game just blew last night. We'll get over to D.C. with Jordan here in a minute. So I watched part of it. Andrew Luck was great, and the Jets just continue to stink. And I don't know why it is that there are just certain franchises that cannot get it figured out for the life of them. You know, Todd Bowles was supposed to be the all-everything guy. Remember when Todd Haley was supposed to be the all-everything guy and there were people in our profession that were writing and that were talking and were going on and on and on and on and on about this brilliant mastermind, genius, Todd Haley, genius. And Todd Haley's been just, you know, he's good. I'm not bagging on him as just we get all in front of ourselves and just slobber all over how great these guys are supposed to be. Todd Bowles is going to be genius. No, he's going to the same cruddy situation as the coaches before him. Just you can be the smartest guy in the world, but there's certain organizations. And for many, 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 many years, the football team here in town was one of them, but they finally figured it out, right? It took Michael coming in, some leadership, and getting it away from some people and moving some people on and into where the Cardinals are a solid football foundation organization. Todd Bowles is sitting there on Monday Night Football with, what are we doing here at quarterback again? And yeah, we have these nice names, but they come to New York and they just disappear. And so Todd Bowles had it going pretty good here in Arizona. Now all of a sudden they're going to fire him. And it hasn't even been 2 years. It's just funny how it's flavor of the day, flavor of the week. We latch onto somebody because they're a nice quote or they're nice to us or, you know, whatever. And then they go into another situation and they can't coach dead. They just can't get it done. So I felt bad for him last night. You know, they do these tight shots on Todd Bowles and his team just getting their heads kicked in and beat in. And there's really nothing there that's coming back to help him out. They show these tight shots of Ryan Fitzpatrick, who looks like he's the usher in the 300 level, you know, and he's wearing a football uniform. Yeah, some of you are fans of his and family of his, but let's be honest. It's not gone well for him back there. So it just wasn't good. You know, I think the NFL now, because we've gone through the early part of the season, I'm one of those, and I would say that I'm not alone on this. There are those that have seen this league for a long time that know that now that August is a complete waste of time with training camp, September football is not nearly as good as November football. And there's respected announcers who I've talked to that won't say it on the air because they have their jobs here, but it's a fact. When you get to about Thanksgiving or the week before Thanksgiving, the intensity goes up a whole different notch or two or five. Because the season is just long and you don't get all wound up about a loss in October. You just don't do it. And so I'm more interested now in what's going on in the NFL than I was back in September and October. Maybe it's because the college football season is finally wound down. And we all saw the great excitement around college football and the fabulous finishes and all that. And And so I feel really good about what's going on around the league. I'm looking forward to watching the Chiefs and the Raiders on Thursday Night Football. Peter's going to join us here in a few minutes from up the Raiders facility. Very much looking forward to that. There's been quite a bit of news around Arizona State in the last 24 hours. And the news around ASU, Bruce Feldman just tweeted that Jay Norvell is a finalist for the Nevada job. We told you about 3 weeks ago that Chip Lindsey's name had surfaced at Georgia State. That was like, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. So some of the staff members on Todd Graham's group are looking around, and that's to be expected. That's just how it is being the life of an assistant coach. But Arizona State last night landed a quarterback recruit that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. We'll get into that. We'll have that for you. There's some other things going on here in town, and we'll get to Jordan. He's at the winter meetings, just breaking off with an interview, just finishing up there. We'll get to Jordan here in a second. The Suns play tonight at Utah. Russell Westbrook had another triple-double last night. I put this down in my show notes. Do you realize what's going on with Russell Westbrook? And I know some of you just don't like him, don't care for him at all. But Russell Westbrook is doing something that we just haven't seen. It's like Magic Johnson. It's like Oscar Robertson. He's averaging a triple-double. And every night he goes on the floor and you can say, well, he's just being a hog. Or is it, I'm going to show you because I don't have Kevin Durant here anymore. It's actually very compelling. It's very compelling stuff to see what he's doing. The Suns play at Utah tonight. The Suns, last time we saw them was Saturday night. I actually watched a couple minutes of that. They got drilled by Golden State. They gave up like 139 points. They just weren't good at all in any way, shape, or form. So I'm looking forward to watching some of that tonight. And there's some college basketball tonight. We were on a rant yesterday about Grand Canyon University, and the rant caused some people that are on the Arizona State and even the U of A side of things to say that I'm just giving Grand Canyon University entirely too much respect. I know Peter even mentioned GCU in his Monday morning quarterback column with what Rick Pitino said out here. And so tonight ASU plays Purdue in New York City. It's a very good matchup. I would like to see more of those games take place. U of A tonight takes on UC Irvine. I'm not going to rip them for playing the beloved Anteaters. UC Irvine is one of those teams you have to schedule because U of A always has a difficult schedule. U of A is sitting here right now with a team that Sean Miller only has 7 scholarship or 8 scholarship guys. It seems like he always doesn't have enough in the way of numbers. And so he's got that going tonight, and his guard play is not good. They're beat up and they're banged up. But I am going to watch both those tonight. And so there's some stuff going on that front. The Coyotes, they got drilled last night by Columbus. They play at Chicago tonight against the Blackhawks. At the winter meetings, I think Jordan is, we going to push Jordan back? Or are we going to keep Jordan? Jordan's like in the middle of something. Are we close on Jordan? No, we're not close on Jordan? No, he's working on it. That's fine. That's fine. We'll check in with Jordan a little bit later. We've got Peter coming up. In fact, let's do that next. We'll check in with Peter King. Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback, will join us on the other side, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, Peter King, and then Brock Huard. Stay with us. Raiders facility, of course, Thursday night. It is Raiders. It is Chiefs. We'll get into the Cardinals in a minute, but are the Raiders outside of the Cowboys, Peter, for you covering the NFL for as many years? This has got to be a dream come true season to see two franchises that were so beaten down getting it done. Let's talk about Oakland a little bit and just what are you seeing out of Jack Del Rio's team?
Well, you know, the other day, the Raiders are down 24-9 to Buffalo in the third quarter. And, you know, things are not going well for them. And so at that point, I'm watching several games and I turn away from that game for about 15 minutes and then I turn it back on and they're killing the Bills. I mean, it was probably 20 to 25 minutes later, but this is the most explosive team in football. Derek Carr right now, I don't know that there's a better downfield thrower in football right now. So I think that is their hallmark, the explosiveness of this team and the fact that when they need to get a stop on defense, they're able to do so.
What would Al Davis say about this team, Peter? You covered him. What would he think of this team?
I asked Derek Carr that question.
Yeah.
Would Al Davis be happy this week? You know, and I think his whole Derek just started laughing and And I think and Derek Carr is absolutely right. Al Davis would say just win, baby, because forget about all the stuff on the outside and everything like that. And I think that the way that Davis sort of laid the groundwork for this team is that nothing matters other than those 3 hours. Now, on Sunday, now what ended up mattering a lot, obviously, was courtrooms and battles and right. other things. But I think it's just really cool about how the spirit of Al Davis still really lives in that building in Alameda.
When you walk into that building, are there still old Raider thoughts, memories, feel about that team?
In the parking lot of their building, the first space in the parking lot is reserved, and there's a thing for it, H-O-F Willie Brown.
Oh, that's cool.
So, the greatness, the historic greatness of the Raiders, they pay homage to it every day. The pictures in the building. I've been in Jack Del Rio's office, and there are pictures of old great Raiders, including the classic picture of a chunky John Madden with that long hair patrolling the sidelines, maybe in whatever, 1971 or something like that. But just looking very, very pugnacious and menacing.
Peter King joining us via Skype. He is in the Bay Area, just left the Raiders facility for our weekly visit with Brad Sussmat. Switch gears over to the Cardinals. They're hanging on by a thread. I think there's still a path for them if other teams fall through and all of that. But I look at David Johnson. You and I have gushed about Larry Fitzgerald, and we've talked about Carson Palmer's ups and downs. And if they had a punter and a kicker and a long snapper, it'd be a different season. But Peter, I don't think we've really gotten into David Johnson this season and what you're seeing out of the running back in just his second year and what he's doing here in Arizona.
Well, the other day, maybe yesterday, I said on Twitter right now that, look, somebody asked me, have you seen a better, sort of more complete back than David Johnson? And I said, Ezekiel Elliott is probably one. I think he runs with power better than Johnson does, but that's the only thing that he does better. And Johnson does run with some power. I said this week two or three, and I repeat it now, even though Le'Veon Bell is met, even though Ezekiel Elliott might be MVP, I would not trade any back in football for David Johnson, because I know the person he is, and I know that this is not just a meteor across the sky. This is built to last. And who right now catches the ball and turns up field with a burst and with an effectiveness the way David Johnson does? I don't think anybody does.
Well, and add to that, with a makeshift offensive lineman, DJ Humphreys is just in his second year, couldn't even sniff the field last season, injuries up front. It's really been the Larry Johnson show out here, and I think in seeing Fitz and David come into their own, and a little bit this week of Jermaine Gresham, they're actually figuring some things out here. I just don't know if they have enough time left or not.
Now, that's the problem. They built themselves so big a hole that you just wonder if they can catch up. It's going to be hard, but look, I think 9-6-1 has a 38% chance to make it. I wouldn't give it a majority of a chance.
Sure.
But I think 9-6-1 has a chance. But what that means is that they got to go 4-4. And they've got some landmines on the road on that schedule.
Yeah, they've got Miami this week, New Orleans at home, at Seattle, now with the injury to Earl Thomas, and they finish with the Rams. I mean, it's doable, but it's going to come down to winning up in Seattle, I think, in a couple of weeks.
But they're one team that has never been fazed by playing in Seattle.
That's true.
They haven't always played in Seattle.
No, that's true.
But they've played well when they had to in Seattle.
Let you go off that. Safe travels as always, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks a million, Brad. Sorry for the shaky picture.
Oh, you're good, man. You're good. There's Peter King via Skype joining us every week, wherever he is, out and about or in his office. Love that. With Peter King, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now we go to Seattle to be joined by Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst. And also, he's part of ESPN Seattle on the radio side. It's always good to have Brock on board. Before we get into college football, though, I need to know from Brock Huard, point blank, did the Diamondbacks get fleeced in getting Taiwan Walker down here? Are you guys finally giving up on him? Gene Segura had a monster year. So before we even get into this college football stuff, did the baseball team get taken advantage of by you nice guys in the Pacific Northwest?
No, I don't think so, Bradley. I think that's a win-win for both and where both organizations are. That's an upside play for the Diamondbacks, that they're going to reach Taiwan in a way that two regimes could not here, and that maybe a little bit of adversity and a slice of humble pie will help him. And for the Mariners, they're in a weird spot where they've got to win now with Felix and Cano and Cruz because those windows are closing. And they need to put someone in a position and in that lineup to help those guys. So I think that that's a win-win for both is how I honestly would judge that.
Yeah. Well, you know, judging by your Twitter feed.
You? What do you think?
I hear he's a head case, Taiwan Walker. Heard you guys couldn't get through
to him. No, he's an entitlement case.
All right.
And I think there's a difference.
Okay.
No, he's a competitive guy. Head case is just a wackadoo. And we've seen enough of those in our years in this business.
Yes, we have.
A wacko. That's what I think of with a head case.
Yeah.
I think honestly, Taiwan's is a little bit more of entitlement. In fact, Jerry DePoto, in March when we had him on, and he was new and kind of evaluating everything, and he called Taiwan the Cam Newton of Major League Baseball from just a physical presence, God-given skill set. And I don't think he was totally, you know, at that point saying because of the entitlement or the ego or anything, but I think it's a pretty fair comp. It's a little bit more of that, a little bit more of ego, I think, and entitlement than it is just a wackadoo head case, can't get right. And if someone could reach him appropriately, there's enough gas in that tank, especially in the National League. I think there's enough talent for him to do some damage.
Does he know how to wear a tie on game day so he doesn't get held out for a play? That's the
How about that?
And then your game
how
just
about that,
first Brack, play. We got Derek Anderson down here going crazy years ago, and first play up there. I mean, come on. Get after it.
Never seen it, Brad. I don't know if you have gone back and said, oh, yeah, I've never seen an MVP franchise quarterback that's going to get in a spat with his coach about and this is just the end game, right? The tie and the shirt and all that. That's just the end game. What that shows is a little bit of what I've heard behind the scenes, that he's tough to reach, that he's got an enormous ego, that all the fun-loving they had a year ago and the ride and how easy they all made it, appear to be. This is a whole lot more like the up and down nature that preceded 2015. And I'll be real curious where 2017 on go with Carolina and Cam.
Yeah, but I heard that about you, and you and I have been fine for all these years. So
kind of, but we've not been near as regular this year as we had.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Talking with Brock here at ESPN.
That's because you're hanging now. You're hanging with all them Hollywood stars. That's
Whatever. My star is Eric Sorensen. That's my star. So you know the answer to this one. Oregon's head coach should be Chris Peterson. That's who the Ducks should go get. They should go right after Chris Peterson.
Are you out of your mind?
Because there's not a bigger name. There's not a bigger name available.
Are you trying to create a divide? I come on the show and you say something as insane as that.
If you're Oregon, you could match. You could double. And that's the hated rival. That would take the rivalry to a newest level, highest level. That's the guy, Chris Peterson at Oregon.
Yeah.
I just had to say that.
And that won't happen.
What do you see? Well, I know it's not going to happen, but they should at least call. They should go after him because there's not a better coach in the country this year, right? He's the coach of the year, right?
Can I give you a name that I think? I think he should be coach of the year, right up there with Nick and with Mike McIntyre. And I think there's three or four.
Give me a name.
And I've not heard this at all, and I don't think he's interviewed. But it's who I would try to realistically poach and go after is Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy, who's worked with a booster, T. Boone Pickens, that's difficult, that wants to win now, that gives you every resource available. Mike Gundy, that has recruited to Stillwater and has developed his players through the years, that I think is a phenomenal coach, has had staff turnover, has had player turnover, and has won with all different types and sorts. And I think a Mike Gundy would be a really legitimate, big-time hire if they could make that happen. I heard a rumbling, and he probably shot it down, but I would go that route and pursue him with full force.
Yeah, again, if I'm at Oregon, I make a call north. But Mike Gundy's a good name. It's a good game. I know he's not going to pick up the phone. I know that.
But now, that call north is going to say, you know, I appreciate it. And you guys had a great run here the last decade with Chip and with Phil. But I know what 30, 40, 50 years of football is like. And I know what Don James did through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. I know, you know, that there's enough raw goods here, that there's recruiting and there's the academics and there's the stadium and there's the history. And that I've got a whole lot more here to sustain it than the very nice story of Oregon over the last 10 to 15 years.
Was that arrogant?
That's spreading it pretty thick.
That's spreading it pretty thick. That's, you know, that's good. Talking with Brock here at ESPN College Football Analyst. And, okay, so you told me, I think it was at the end of October, I asked you point blank, could Washington play with Alabama? And you said, without a question, you didn't even hesitate. And now we're sitting here in December, and they're going to play each other. Can Washington play with Alabama?
Did LSU play with Alabama?
Yes.
Because LSU defensively is the comp. LSU is the group that at all three levels is very solid. Dave Aranda, the D coordinator I've gotten to know, is tremendous, puts his kids in a position for success, manipulates his scheme week to week. LSU is the comp for Washington defensively. And I don't think there's anybody in my field of colleagues, I've run that, you know, even to some of my SEC friends that I think are entrenched in that conference, and even they don't dismiss that. That when you have a secondary like Washington's that can lock down, when you've got active safeties, when you've got beef on that D-line that is very difficult to move, playmaking linebackers, that I think that's the comp. And all I know is that LSU had Alabama 0-0, and if they could do one thing on offense whatsoever, we're going to make that an incredibly down-to-the-wire game. Instead, they were putrid on offense and could do nothing against a fully healthy Alabama group. If Alabama had all their horses in 4 weeks, if they get them all back, which doesn't look like is going to happen, then I would say very difficult to score 20 points on them with, you know, some of the challenges that the Huskies will have in their mismatches with their offense against that D. But I think it will be a toe-to-toe game. I think Washington has the full force of physicality on the defensive side of the ball to match them, and I think it will be a great game in Atlanta.
Okay, so, and I respect your opinion greatly on this, so I'm curious, take me deeper. What did the committee not get right, in your opinion, if anything?
I think they got it largely right. Yeah, I do. I think a lot of the talking heads Friday night, Saturday, I was losing my mind a little bit.
Big Ten, Big Ten, Big Ten. Your colleagues wanted Big Ten. It was just obnoxious.
Yeah.
It was just obnoxious.
It was just latching onto the only thing that you could with Washington, which was obviously they're out of conference, which was totally out of Chris Peterson's control. So you'd be punishing them for something that Sark did years ago that they didn't know Rutgers would be awful. They weren't awful 5 years ago when that was scheduled home and home. And that was the only thing. That's the only thing that you could say is 127 out of 128. You bring up strength of record. You bring up metrics, any metric, offense, defense, efficiency. You bring up NFL talent. You bring up the eye test. You bring up beating top 25 teams. Only Alabama and Washington that have more quality wins in their top 30. So, I mean, it was just as if they were only latching on to the one negative, whereas with the Big Ten story, they were only latching on to the positive. How about the fact they lost twice? And how about the fact they got drubbed being Penn State by 39 by Michigan? And right. How about the multitude of stats and metrics that weren't close? So that's the thing that was a little kind of disturbing to me. It was just so one-dimensional in that conversation. But the committee, they didn't pay heed and much attention to that. I think they largely got it right.
Flip it over to Ohio State Clemson down here on New Year's Eve. Now, this game is the late game, which to me means they're expecting blowout in your game. No offense.
Yep.
But the late game here, Ohio State Clemson, what do you make out of that one?
It'll be a fantastic matchup. And to have a month for both teams to get ready, they're both vulnerable in spots. I thought Washington actually matched up very favorably with Ohio State, and I would probably would take them in that matchup because of Ohio State's challenges on their offensive line. Clemson is going to be able to move the ball. It's going to be able to score, and likewise, give Urban Meyer a month to prepare, and they're going to have all sorts of manipulations and machinations and moving people around and making Clemson think defensively, which is a problem for them. And you saw that against Virginia Tech. You saw that against Pitt. So I think there are going to be a few points scored in that game. Both teams have vulnerabilities. Both teams have areas of tremendous strength. And that's a three-point kind of margin right now. Sounds about right. Should be a very compelling game.
Heisman Trophy, where'd you go on this one?
I'm not, I sign a waiver that I can't quite share that until Sunday or Monday with you.
Ah.
But let me just say this. Winners win in the end. And how you finish and how you play on the biggest of stages is really important. Each Heisman voter's got their own criteria. Some look at stats, some look at value, some look at, you know, talent, some look at whatever they want to look at. Say this is the best player, kind of like the committee between that best or most deserving. And you walk that line between best player and most deserving. You walk that line in a committee between best team and most deserving team. And I tended to, on the Heisman side for me, I tended to lean on the most deserving, and we'll see how that plays out Saturday.
I'm a voter as well, and I submitted right before getting to you, and I'm in the same boat. We're not supposed to, but I wanted to see if you'd break the rule. And you didn't. and I was torn right down to the end, but at the end of the day, I think you and I are on the same page. It's quarterback. How's that? So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Takes
it's funny, right? Because it kind of, it in some ways parallels what this committee just dealt with. Let's face it. USC was playing some of the best ball, and they went toe-to-toe in Washington's backyard and beat them. And if someone says that to me right now, I think USC is better than Washington, I can't necessarily argue that. But as far as deserving over the course of 13 weeks and what you put on, the decisions you make and how you play, you know, you can lose a golf tournament in the first round. You hit enough double bogeys, you're going to be out. And they double bogeyed and triple bogeyed, and they were out, unfortunately. So best and deserving was fascinating to watch unfold over the weekend. Best deserving, I think, will be fascinating to see unfold Saturday in New York City.
Last question, and that is, are you going to be here? Because you're a busy man, but you are a UW through and through dude. Are you coming to the Valley? Are you doing like the the Pain Staker Bowl or the Pinstripe Bowl or any of that stuff?
Well, let me say, if the Huskies had been in the Fiesta Bowl, we would have been down there an awful lot just because of connections and opportunities, we would have, I think, had a chance to be kind of entrenched. Unfortunately, with my bowl schedule being around New Year's as well, and maybe one a little bit before it, I'm going to be kind of moving and shaking. Having said all of that, little bro is still in Atlanta. Family, Damon is the color on the radio. My older brother, Damon, for the Huskies.
Yep.
I think we'll all try to find a way to gravitate to Atlanta at some point in that process.
That's fine. I'll see you in March. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
You got it, Brad. See you, bud.
It's Brock Huard with us from Seattle. Always good to catch up with Brock, ESPN college football analyst, ESPN radio in the Pacific Northwest. Does a great job there. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. Thanks again to Brock Huard and Peter King. Tomorrow, Michael Fabiano will be with us. We'll have all the Hall of Famers' views on the fantasy football stuff. The winter meetings are going on in Washington, D.C., and I'm a believer that the winter meetings is one of those benchmarks. It doesn't matter how bad a major league team is in your city, that if you're a big league city, that there's enough baseball fans and the Hot Stove League is a big enough deal that you should be at the winter meetings every year. And every year we have gone to the winter meetings. We have found a way to get to the winter meetings. And for our little company, it's fun. I think it's something that we hear good feedback off of. Some of our partners like to be involved in it, which is great. We appreciate their support in it. And we just keep doing it because baseball is important even when the team stinks. Hopefully the baseball team here gets it figured out. With that as a backdrop, Jordan Hamm is in Washington, D.C., and he joins us now via Skype. And how's your first winter meetings been to this point? How's that gone?
I mean, so far it's so good. It's been, if you're a baseball fan, I mean, it couldn't be better. You walk in and you see Ken Rosenthal on one side. You turn around, you see Jeff Passan on the other side, and you know, all these, Joe Maddon is rolling through and things like that. So there are plenty of big names, plenty of recognizable faces, and it's just a bunch of people that want to talk baseball. So couldn't be better if you're a baseball fan.
But you're a Seamhead, right? I mean, you'd admit that you're a Seamhead, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Growing up, it was always baseball for me. So yeah, this is really fun.
Yeah. Were you any good when you played?
I was decent. I was a good defender.
Right.
Little League was definitely my heyday, but
Little League.
I mean, clearly I'm not here signing contracts. So
no.
That really panned out well for me.
Yeah. Obviously you're there doing stuff for Sports 360 AZ at the winter meetings, which is fine. We're fine with that. I'm curious, in all seriousness, having gone to the winter meetings, it's like there's this batch of people that's looking for jobs, which is fine. There's this batch of people that are selling their wares, which is kind of goofy. There's this batch of people that are there to just strictly do baseball business. And you're there to kind of cover the whole thing. Did you go over to the trade show today? And can you explain what that's like to the average fan?
Yeah, so the trade show is basically a bunch of vendors that are trying to get their products in the stadium, licensed with the team, things like that.
Yeah.
So you walk through and there, Wilson has a booth with all of their baseball equipment, and then you turn left and there are Beanie Baby-esque type things and mascots. And I actually got to talk to a few guys that basically are making wigs to style after baseball players, so you can wear them under your baseball hat. So you have Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom, Johnny Cueto. They said that their two favorite teams right now are the New York Mets and the San Francisco Giants. So yeah, a lot of really quirky things. And there are a few times where it's just like, I'm not sure if you get outside much because you are. I'm not sure how you came up with this idea, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun, a lot of big personalities in that, and there will be something here in the next couple days on the site regarding that. So
that's cool. Now, I mean, that's funny, the Jacob DeGrom wig. Of course, it makes perfect sense. I'm a dude with my hat backwards, and I got my DeGrom wig with me for the game tonight. Of course I do. Jordan Hamm is with us via Skype in Washington, D.C. at the winter meetings. All right, on a serious side, you're also there covering the Diamondbacks. You were with Mike Hazen yesterday. Every day you're with them. What's been that experience been like for you, and what can you tell the fans of what the Diamondbacks are trying to get done back there?
Well, right now, you know, it's nothing really to report. They made a deal coming into winter meetings with Jeff Mathis to help platoon that catcher position. They non-tendered Wellington Castillo a couple days ago and now have brought Mathis in. Chris Herman seems to be the guy. But Hazen also said that they could add another catcher to help platoon if they can find somebody that can catch for them in that 50 to 60 game range. They're totally fine with that because Herman gives them some flexibility position-wise. He can catch, he can play the outfield, and I think they do want to try to take the load off of him, the physical wear and tear that comes as a catcher. He's really only – his career high is 57 games played, so I don't think he can really gear up and take 120 games right off the bat. So that's something that they are looking into. And then the bullpen. Again, nothing really to report there, but Hazen likes the flexibility that they now have after non-tendering Wellington Castillo and Ruby De La Rosa. So we'll see what happens with that. It seemed like there were a few things in the work. He said he's totally open to adding quite a few relievers and that there aren't really set roles in this relief staff right now. So that's something to keep an eye on here in the coming days.
Right, and so you're with them every day. You're also going to be with managers this afternoon, right? That's the drill today for you?
Yeah. I'll be with quite a few managers here. They have their media availability really heating up this afternoon and then tomorrow. Torey Lovello, he was supposed to be tomorrow. He got bumped up to this afternoon. So we'll have media availability with him. And then the Diamondbacks are holding media availability with Mike Hazen every day of these winter meetings. So later in the day, I will be meeting with him as well.
And you're going to be with Joe Maddon today and Bruce Bochy, all those guys you're going to be with today, right?
Yeah. So there will be Bochy. As you said, Joe Maddon. I believe Dave Roberts is kicking things off this afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern time. Plenty of NL West guys, West Side guys. There will be plenty probably that will have ties to the Diamondbacks here with those media availability.
Let me ask you this, though, Jordan. And Jordan Hamm's joining us from the winter baseball meetings in Washington, D.C., part of Sports 360 AZ's coverage back there. The big story nationally is that Bryce Harper asked yesterday for $400 million from the Nationals, one. And two, that Chris Sale could be headed from the White Sox to the Nationals, and that Gio Gonzalez could be coming back. I mean, those two deals, I myself would pay Mike Trout a dollar more than I would pay Bryce Harper, but that's just me. Has there been much? I'm sure there's been buzz about this, but with all the other baseball stuff going on, what's the Harper contract demand been received like by the media that's there and the people you've talked to?
I mean, it's one of those things where these contracts continue to get bigger and bigger. So I think, especially for the guys that have been around for a while, it might be a bit of an eye roll that $400 million could warrant a superstar. But I think it's also something that where they're what these teams are looking to try to do. You know, I don't think that anybody is really running with this report and saying like, yeah, this is going to be a done deal. So, you know, obviously a huge claim by Bryce Harper. He's been one of the best over the past few years. So we'll see how that continues to work out and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's definitely made some waves here. But again, it's still so much in the abstract that it's kind of hard to wrap your head around that.
All right. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time. Good stuff. See you stuff on the site. There's Jordan Hamm via Skype live in Washington, D.C. Appreciate him jumping on board. A few other things I want to get to on today's show. ASU last night did land the junior college quarterback, Blake Barnett. He decided to come here. He was at Alabama. We have a little bit of video, I think, that Jared's got of him playing. It's not much because he didn't play a whole lot at Alabama. He played against USC, and that was about it. And in the game against USC, Alabama just crushed him, but he was out of there by the middle of the first quarter. Or second quarter, I should say, because there was too much of this going on. And so, yeah, he's coming to ASU, and that's fine. They're up to 5 quarterbacks now, by my count. I've been texting the family of Ryan Kelly this morning, because all of you have been asking, okay, what's going to happen with Ryan Kelly? And I just got a text like a minute ago from one of them. And so we're going to follow that story throughout the day, because, there's too many quarterbacks. That's the way it is. In Division I football programs, in some view, I'm one of those that thinks, bringing in a quarterback every year in a class sounds fine. When you bring 2 quarterbacks in, and if you give me this was just too good of an opportunity to pass up, and so on and so forth, it means the people that you already have here you don't believe can get it done long term. JUCO quarterbacks, especially quarterbacks, are to fill a pressing need. They just are. I don't care how you spin it. You go recruit JUCO to fill a need. And so you're looking at your quarterback room and you're saying to yourself, self, here's somebody that can come in and help us. Well, yeah, there's dozens of those guys. But you're also saying, I don't have belief that I have the guy here in place, which means for the last couple of years, as you've been waiting for Taylor Kelly to move on and graduate and Mike Bercovici to move on and graduate, the guys you brought in have not developed fully. Am I right on that? I mean, I don't know. Did they go to a bowl game this year? Did they go to Chase Field last year? So come on, guys. You have to look at this realistically. This is not all about we've got it figured out. Doesn't mean I wouldn't want him here. It's just there's got to be some players that go. There's going to be some parts that move. And when they move, there'll be people at ASU that say, well, he couldn't do this and he couldn't do that. And that's obnoxious. It's just it didn't work out. It's like when Rich Rod had 6 quarterbacks, 6 or 7 quarterbacks a couple of years ago, and none of them were able to play. So it's a problem. I would much rather see a whole bunch of guys on the defensive side of the football, in particular in the secondary that, I don't know, could cover people, than keep bringing in quarterbacks. So it's fine. It's fine. That's going on. And then Jay Norvell's name is around the Nevada job today. So could be looking at some staff change there. U of A, on the other hand, so U of A is working hard to try to get visits from Palomao over at Mountain Point and Austin Jackson over at North Canyon this coming weekend. This is the busiest time of year in recruiting. So there's a lot going on the college football front. And we'll have a recruiting roundup with Jason and myself up on the website later today. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out. High school, college, pro college, high school, makes no difference to me. Things that we look at around the state just a little bit differently than everyone else. Our TV show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussmatt's Football AZ. That airs 8 times tonight and tomorrow and on Thursday as well. Haley Stasiak was our producer today. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. He didn't screw up. I almost did. Eric Sorensen just kind of hung around today. Jordy's back in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being with us.